Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's show. My very special guests are Trish and Rob McGregor, and we will be talking about their new book, Secrets of Spirit Communication, Techniques for Tuning In and Making Contact. Spirits communicate with us every day, especially the spirits of our loved ones. But are you tuning into them? Secrets of Spirit Communication is your go-to guide for identifying and interpreting the signs, symbols, and synchronicities around you. Whether it's an object, sound, scent, dream, or pattern, this book will help you understand what it means and how to respond. Featuring numerous stories of real-life spirit contact, Spirits of Secret Communication also provides techniques and exercises for raising your awareness of spirits and effectively communicating with them. You'll learn about meditation, power animals, how to use altered states, and the five main methods to fully engage with spirit. This inspiring book makes spirit communication comfortable and easy, helping to confirm that those in spirit are right beside you. Now, there are several websites that you can go to find out more information. One is for Trish and Rob's blog, which is blogsynchrosecrets.com. And you can also find out more about Trish by going to trishmcgregor.com. And for Rob, it's robmcgregor.buzz. And I do have direct links to all of those websites in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Rob and Trish to the show. Good day.
Hi, Robert. Thank you for having us.
Hello. Glad to be here.
It is my pleasure. I love talking about this kind of topic. it's great. And I'll tell you, my listeners are going to eat it up. So I'm looking forward to today's show. So let's first start with, I usually like to have the guests kind of give a little bit of a background about their journey and kind of what's got them to the point of where they are. And I know both you, Trish, and Rob have very unique and full journeys. So if you wouldn't mind, maybe give us just a little bit of a recap of kind of, you know, what you've done so far in leading up to the spirit communication. Let's go ahead and start with you, Trish.
Okay, this is a complicated story, so I'm going to abbreviate it. Rob and I met when he was a newspaper reporter. I was teaching English to Cuban refugees. And one of the first questions I asked him, I said, "Do you know what synchronicity is?" And he paused and he said, "Yeah, Jung." And I thought, okay, he's a keeper. So it's been a journey since then.
And we've been writing books ever since we met. My interest has always been, since I was young, in the paranormal, metaphysics. And I was always surprised as I was growing up that other people were not interested or were frightened of these matters. And as I got into an adult and became a newspaper reporter, which is, you know, very logically oriented work, I was surrounded by skeptics every day. And then when I met Trish, I met someone who had a similar interest. I found out that we had both read the Seth books and had followed them, Jane Roberts' Seth books, as they appeared, this channeled information. And neither one of us knew anyone else who had read those books or could talk with anyone about the books until we met each other. So that was an initiation point for us and the start of our journey.
Yeah, well, you know, I would think that just the opening question about synchronicity, I mean, that kind of sets the stage. You know, it's kind of like, okay, we're on the same wavelength there. And you know, and I'm sure there are not very many introductory lines like that used out there very often.
Probably not.
We're both been writing novels, unpublished novels. She had just written her sixth one when I met her, and she gave it to me to read, and I suggested some revisions, and she went ahead and made some changes, sent it in to her agent. She had an agent, and that was the first book that sold, her first novel.
And it had to do with psychic stuff.
Yeah.
Well, great. Well, that's good. So since you know we have your blog of synchrosecrets.com, let's talk about you know that particular endeavor. I mean, it seems like you've had that going on for quite some time, correct?
Next year will be 10 years. Yeah, we kind of started
that's quite.
I was sitting outside one day and I was feeling kind of depressed. I said, okay, I'm going to start a blog. And Rob says, on what? I said, on synchronicity, you know, because it encompasses everything. It's about spirit contact. It's about supposedly meaningful coincidence. It can be about precognition, telepathy. All the psychic and paranormal things really do fall under Jung's umbrella of synchronicity. So that's how it started.
Wow. Now, when you started the blog, was it a kind of like a go-to place for people to share their synchronistic experiences?
Yeah, it was. And one of the things we found that at least 10 years ago, a lot of people were experiencing synchronicity, but they didn't have anybody to talk about it with. So we eventually, these people started coming to our blog and sharing their stories of all different sorts of synchronicities.
Yeah, it turned out to be a blog where people would talk about spirit contact, about UFOs and abductions, and a whole variety of stories that fall generally under the paranormal and under synchronicity. So we've just, and we keep putting up stories every couple of days, and usually they have some kind of synchronicity related to. Sometimes we get off on tangents, but work our way back.
There you go. We might do that today during today's conversation, but
I think
we're going to
be fine. Those are good.
That's good. Okay. So how would you describe synchronicity? And, you know, I mean, there is that Jungian perspective, but I mean, over the past 10 years, you know, you've had quite a number of people, you know, present their experiences to you. So after all of that experience, how would you summarize what it is? And do you feel that there's a particular purpose for it occurring?
Well, I mean, the Jungian definition of synchronicity is that there's a correlation between something you experience and what's the other part of that, Rob? I just drew a blank on
similar experiences that are inner and outer,
right,
that come together without outside of cause and effect. So meaningful coincidence. Basically, it's a coincidence, but it's meaningful to the person who experiences it.
And what we've done is, if you're familiar with David Bohm's work, one of the things, he was a physicist, one of the things he said was that there's an implicate and an explicate order in the universe, and out of the implicate, which is like the unfolded order, what that's beneath our daily reality, everything unfolds from that, both time, space, and we think that that's also the border, that synchronicity kind of lives along that border.
Yeah.
So that when you experience a synchronicity, what you're experiencing is that unfolded order of the universe.
Yeah. Where the unfolded order is, there's no cause and effect necessarily, but when it unfolds into our everyday world, that's where the cause and effect takes place in the everyday world, but synchronicity lies right on the border between those two regions.
Yeah, so, I mean, and when you said, you know, that it's significant to the individual, I mean, it seems that some people who experience synchronicity, you know, give it a lot of attention. I'm one of those, you know, that does, you know, and kind of looks for, you know, in your case, the border. Why, you know, did this border event happen? But then there are also other people who will look at that as just simply coincidence, you know, that
it's just
right. In the natural order of things that something like that happens. So,
well, I mean, okay, you know, one of the simplest examples would be you think about a person you haven't seen in 30 years, some old college roommate or something, and you don't know where the person is, don't know if they're alive or dead or what, and then you get a Facebook request within a few hours or a few days from that individual. That would be a synchronicity.
Because it's meaningful to the person. I just thought of that person. And it could also be you know, considered telepathy as well, or precognition.
Or precognition, too.
But generally, synchronicity. Or synchronicity, meaningful coincidence.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, I mean, I'm one of those that, you know, whenever anything synchronistic happens for me, my first response is to say thank you, you know, for showing me this.
Yes, right.
You know, because it's like I'm one of those that, you know, when it came time for guidance and direction, you know, I was the one that was always asking but not necessarily seeing, you know, when it happened.
Right.
So, you know, when synchronicity happens to me, it's a very clear example of paying attention, for me to pay attention.
Well, in our first book, which was Seven Secrets of Synchronicity, the first thing that grew out of our blog, we identified seven types of synchronicity. For instance, they're a confirmation for a decision you've just made. Some are warnings. Some are a reflection of global events.
And then there's also numbers, clusters of numbers.
Yeah.
Really pay attention to 11-11, 1-1, that, you know, they see it over and over again, and they contact us and say, what does it mean?
And sometimes it's spirit contact. A number of years ago, we were in Costa Rica, and my daughter and I walked into a store, and the bill came to $111.11. And I had been thinking about my parents who had loved Costa Rica when they traveled there. And so to me, that was like a communication from them saying, see, we told you it's a great place.
Oh, funny. Yeah, that's great. You know, I had, for me, had a 11-11 thing for me, it's probably now almost 15 or 20 years ago, that when I transitioned from corporate America to the entrepreneurial path, I was just in a state of flux, you know, and I was saying, like, what is my role? What am I supposed to do? And I just kept going on and on, and I mean, asking virtually, I mean, dozens of times a day, I was asking, what am I supposed to do? What's my role? And then I ended up getting that, you know, 11-minute, you know, waking up at 3:11 or...
Right.
And so, I mean, it got so excessive that I really thought I was going crazy. And then one of my intuitive friends said, you know, you've been asking about what your role is. And every time that you get that 11, you know, recognize that that is part of your role. So, I mean,
yeah.
And then everything shifted. I mean, it was like, you know, part of my role was, you know, doing computer work, helping people with business plans. Part of it was doing the dishes or doing the laundry, you know. I mean, it completely shifted my perspective. And then what I found out was wrote it all down and documented, it's like, okay, now I see where I am to be, you know, right now. And so for me, it's an emerging pattern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an emerging pattern. And it's great that you paid such close attention, you know, and that you recorded the pattern. I think that's important,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it truly was going to drive me crazy. I mean, you know, it was one of those things. And this was the patience and kept feeling that I wasn't getting it, you know. But it was just I wasn't aware of, you know, what I was receiving, or nor did I understand, you know, the full scope. You know, things have changed a bit.
Well, you know, that's
that's
another type of synchronicity too. When our lives are really in flux, like yours was, or when, for instance, if somebody in your family has died, whether some huge pivotal point, that's when synchronicity seems to happen most frequently.
And also travel, too.
And travel.
You break away from your regular routine and you're in a different place. Things just open up. And for us, it's been synchronicities and also spirit contact. For example, we took one trip to Dominican Republic, and we saw this hotel on the beach. It looked really beautiful. It had this it was like U-shaped, facing the water, and in the middle there, apparently we thought there was like a garden. Well, it turned out to be a cemetery in the middle. And our room was facing the cemetery, so we'd walk out on our porch and overlooking the cemetery. And our daughter got up. She was about 11 or 12 years old at the time.
She got freaked out.
She said, "What are we doing looking at the cemetery all the time?" And, so we went to the management, and they moved us to one of the apartments on the side. But it turned out that that door was even closer to the cemetery. But the balcony, though, looked out to the ocean. But we had a really unusual experience there. First, Trish and I one day walked out and saw the gate was open.
And to the cemetery.
We thought, to the cemetery. And we thought these must be old ancient graves. We walk in, and we, within 10 feet, we come to one of a guy who had died just 4 months ago, and he is a windsurfer. This was a windsurfing trip we were on. And this guy's headstone was half of his windsurfing board stuck in the ground, and the grave was fresh. And then this old man comes up, and he's the grave digger, and he motions to us. He wants to show us something, and he says, "You see what happens here? The sand keeps coming in and builds up, and so there are graves stacked on top of each other." I'm digging a grave, and I found another coffin. Come look. And we said, "That's okay. We don't really have to take a look."
And then Rob took a stone
out
of the cemetery, which I think was what
precipitated
what happened next.
I picked up a stone and put it in my pocket, and we left. So that night at our new room on the side there, we went to bed about 10:30. Our daughter was in the back, and she was asleep. And we were probably sleeping maybe half an hour.
It was pretty close to 11 when it happened.
When we heard this boom, 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 repetition, three
separate booms.
Booms, yeah.
Groups of threes.
It was like a wrecking ball hitting the side of the building. It was that loud and that vibrant. It happened 1, 2, 3, then pause, 1, 2, 3, then pause, 1, 2, 3. After the third set, we both sat up simultaneously. I thought it was a dream at first. We both looked at each other. "Did you hear that?" And she said, "Yes." And it was just there was nothing fearful about it. It was just we felt both very energized by this experience. Then we realized that the television was on. Well, we weren't watching television. Now the television was playing. And this was we thought maybe there was an earthquake or something. And so we talked to the management in the morning, and they said, they're spirits, but they're friendly spirits. No, the spirits here are friendly."
And there hadn't been an earthquake.
No earthquake or anything. But anyhow, I took that stone and tossed it back over the fence. And it was
that was a good decision there, Ron. For the both of you, when it comes to spirit communication, is that something, you know, kind of moving from the synchronicity into the spirit communication, is this something that you both are involved with, or I mean, have learned, or you know, or I mean, that was obviously some kind of communication there with the booming,
right?
You know, so I mean, is this something the communication aspect? How do you each interact with that kind of communication?
We're not mediums, but we both have had spirit contact numerous.
That involves sound, sense, and sensations. That's one of our chapters, because through sound seems to be fairly common.
And through dreams, that's what happened with me when, like a friend of mine, I hadn't seen for many years. He had a very dry sense of humor. Suddenly, he was in my dream, and he was right there. It's like I was awake, and he looked at me and said, "I'm dead now." And then it was a short time later, I found out that he had died in a car accident. When my cousin died, I wasn't real close to him, but he suddenly appeared to me in a very vivid dream. It felt like I was awake, and he was right there. And he looked at me, and he seemed very healthy. And he says, "What's happening?" He said to me, then he vanished. And he was not. And then I found out a day later that he had just died, and he had a brain tumor, and he was not healthy at all. But he looked very revitalized when I saw him in the dream. So that's the type of things that happen to us. It's not so much that we put out an intention to, you know, make contact, but they seem to come to us in various circumstances. Although, Trish, you try to contact your parents someday.
Yeah, I mean, my parents, let's see, my mother passed in 2000 from complications from Alzheimer's, and my dad passed 5 years later, complications from Parkinson's. So for a long time, I would keep track of them in my dreams, trying to figure out if my mother was still wandering around the Alzheimer's ward looking for my father in the afterlife. I thought, how awful if that's what's going on. And then one night, in one of Rob's meditation classes, it was like an eyes half open meditation. And in the corner of the meditation room, I suddenly saw my mother. She looked like she was in her 30s, really vibrant. And she was directing a bunch of people into a theater. And all of a sudden, she starts waving, and my father comes down, real sprite, you know, looks young and no longer using a walker. Then they both realized I had seen them, and then the whole scene just faded away. So that was my answer. You know, I finally got my answer that they were okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've taught meditation workshops for a number of years, and we've had some unusual experiences in the class with people coming to me telling me the stories of spirit contact they've had during meditations. And one of them, it might have been the same one Trish was just talking about, there are six different classes, one a week, and it was right at the very end of the sixth class. I was just closing it, and suddenly the room went dark. And
totally dark.
And we got up and walked over and turned the switch back on, but nobody had gotten up. But the lights had gone off. It was just like
it was like a punctuation point. Okay, class is over.
Right. That was a sense of spirit contact for me that somehow just flicked the lights off.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting with dreams, and like you were saying, Trish, in your dreams, your parents coming to you kind of mm-hmm. with their best image forward, you know, putting forward
right.
their best image, you know, in their prime, whatever that prime would have been to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems to be, you know, it seems to be a common way of, you know,
letting you know that they're okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. And yeah, I just, I get that parent in the dream a lot. Mine was the mother was in 2000 and no father was in 2000, mother in 2008. But yeah, I mean they come regularly and you know try to give me.
Well, I wish my parents would drop by more.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it's a good thing. No, it all depends on your parents. But anyway, that is certainly, through the dream state is one way of doing it. Now, in a few minutes, we're going to be taking a break. But before we do that, as I mentioned in the introduction, that in your book, you talk about five main methods to engage with spirit. And now, one of them was intention, which, Rob, you mentioned that, Trish, that you both, other than Trish's pun,
right,
putting out her parents, you really don't necessarily do. But so how does intention as a method fit into engagement?
Okay, let's start with the basics, though. First, the first step is recognition. You have to recognize that contact.
It's possible.
It's possible. If you don't, then you're not going to go any further. But once you recognize that it's at least possible, then the next step is awareness, increasing your awareness to the many different ways that spirit can make contact. And we have lots of different methods that have people have made contact. My mother had experiences with her husband, my father, after he passed, where she had three different distinct experiences, and there were different ways that spirit made contact. And one was symbolic. The initials MAC were right on. She saw that right on a frosty window. It was winter, right next to the chair where he would sit and read. And Mac was his nickname. So she saw his initials there, the nickname, right in the frost. Another time, she was in the basement doing laundry, and she looked across the room, and there was this ball of light, and she just knew it was him. It was a ball of light that was there for several seconds and vanished. And the third way, he made an actual physical appearance. She was sitting in that same chair where he used to read, and she looked up, and there he was in the entrance, the doorway to the den. And it's kind of interesting. He was wearing an unusual shirt. He had an orange patterned shirt on, and she looked up and said, "Where did you get that shirt?" She'd never seen that shirt before. And then he smiled and vanished. Those are just three different ways. So that's awareness. And then it comes to intention. That's where you initiate the contact. You make a request. You repeat it aloud and say it over and over. And then after that, it's attention. That's when you give it attention and you add desire. You visualize the one that you want to see, and you think about a fond memory of that person. Those are all the steps. And then finally, it's no tension. You just got to let it go. You've done everything you needed, and wait to see what happens. Those are the five steps.
Okay, wow. I mean, the idea of, recognition, awareness, and attention, and then no tension. I would think that the no tension would be, might be the hardest. After you spending the first four steps, paying attention.
Right. Then you're supposed to release it. That's tough.
That's releasing it to let it go and see what happens. You're sending it out, basically.
Okay, great. Well, we're halfway through the show already, so we're kind of zipping right along. But I'm going to go ahead and take just a quick break, and then when we come back, I wanted to talk a little bit more about some of the other topics in your book about the secrets of spirit communication. So everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And just a reminder again, in addition to Blog Talk Radio and iTunes, we are now on TuneIn and iHeartRadio. And you can go ahead and follow us on any of those platforms. And on our website, we have links to each of those to make it easy for you to follow us. So again, today, my very special guests are Trish and Rob McGregor, and we are talking about their new book, Secrets of Spirit Communication, Techniques for Tuning In and Making Contact. And again, you can find out more by visiting their websites. The first one would be blog.synchrosecrets.com. And Trish's website is trishmcgregor.com. And Rob's is robmcgregor.buzz. And I got direct links to all three of those in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back, Rob and Trish.
I have a question for you, Robert, about
yes,
these 11s. What in the 11s led you to doing podcasts like this?
well, actually, the 11s, there wasn't a...
Was it evolved?
It wasn't necessarily a direct. Actually, what I used to do years ago, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, I was a production and marketing support for a broadcast radio show a friend of mine had.
Okay.
And so that was that. And then it was like kind of right up. That was kind of pretty much shortly after the. No, that was shortly before the. The 11s, you know. So anyway, the broadcast, that show kind of went on, ran its life, and I've always been open to that. My degree is in psychology from Whittier, so I was one of those that, you know, was always open to, you know, possibilities, you know, and dreams, and Jung was one of my favorite classes, you know, in my undergraduate classes. So anyway, you know, that was always there. But after that, then I started just meeting up with a lot of people who were in the metaphysical realm, and I just kind of from there went on. And then in 2010 is when I started the podcast. And that one was, I was thinking about doing a network of shows about metaphysical things and different hosts. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that, you know, when I was doing broadcasts, one of my biggest challenges was getting the host to do his job.
Right.
To get the guests and ask the questions. And so then I thought, you know, was I inviting myself for multiple of those challenges? And the main reason I didn't want to do my own show is because on occasion I would be a guest on his show, and I just hated my voice after I recorded them. So anyway, that was one of the reasons I did not want to be a host, you know, of a show. But anyway, I finally, you know, kind of going back and forth, and, you know, my guidance said, just get over it, do it. If it works, great. If it doesn't, that's fine, too. So here I am, you know, almost 8 years later.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it was quite a row. But I mean, I think, you know, so many of us have those journeys that, you know, there are forks in the road that you kind of go one way, and, and sometimes you go backwards. Sometimes you climb up hills. Sometimes you go down the valley. You know, there's just all kinds of, you know, ups and downs and sideways with our paths.
Well, you know, you mentioned Jung, and one of the first synchronicities I ever had was I when I went to Europe, I went with a friend who, at the time I was a teacher and she was a social worker, and she said, well, where do you want to go in Switzerland? And I said, well, I want to go to Bollingen, I think is the way you pronounce it, where Jung's castle is on Lake Zurich. So we spent the night in Zurich, I think it was, and then we took a train, but we missed our first train. So we had to take the later train, and we walked through the town, found his castle. And who's in the backyard but his grandson with his dog? Because I went up to him, I said, my God, this guy looks like Jung, you know, pictures I'd seen of Jung. So I went up to him, we started talking about synchronicity and about dreams and about Jung. So if I had taken that, if we had caught that first train, that never would have happened.
Yeah, it's amazing how that, you know, and I get, whenever I get lost, I'm directionally dysfunctional.
Right, me
whenever
too.
I used to kind of judge, you know, kind of beat myself up for that until I realized that, you know, maybe there's just something that I can see or something different place I need to be, and I just go with it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's made my life
something
so much
experience.
Easier.
Mine too.
Just the purpose.
Absolutely.
When things happen like that. Just my meeting with Trish was unusual in that I was this editor I had who was very difficult editor. I had trouble with him, but he changed my life by giving me this assignment that ended up with me meeting Trish, because I was there as a reporter. She was teaching English to Cuban refugees, and I was doing a story on the in the aftermath of the Cuban boat, I think
the Marielitos,
where there was 110,000 Cubans came into South Florida, and that's how I met Trish, and I'm very thankful for this editor who is a terrible person, and his name was Chuck, and everybody called him Up Chuck. Because
that's funny.
The nightmare boss.
Yep.
I
think we've all had
like
one of those.
He was a little tyrant in my life and served a purpose.
Absolutely. Great. Well, before we go on to talk more about some of the topics covered in your book, I do have a caller. His name is Jay, and he's calling from Canada. So hello, Jay.
Hey there, how's it going?
Doing great. How about yourself, sir?
Doing pretty good, so.
What's your question?
I just wondered, your book regarding, Trish's, regarding communications with the spirit world, is it communications with anything else, or is it just with the spirit world? Or anything spirit world?
You mean
like animals?
Aliens, or...
No,
fairies,
not aliens.
Gremlins. What?
Well, just well.
No,
just,
I mean, I think these techniques work for anything.
Okay.
You know, for any for any type of thing. I mean, it depends. You know, if you could tell me what are you trying to communicate with?
Oh, just the spirit world. So.
Yeah, I mean, the techniques work virtually with anything.
Okay.
I think. Anything unseen, anything that, you know. Consensus reality says you're not supposed to see or talk to or hear.
But watch out what you wish for.
Yeah, right.
You may find it. I mean, for example, if you're really intent on meeting an alien, you may not like what you encounter when that experience happens. But you could use this same method of that we had just outlined to make that kind of contact.
Mm. Okay.
And it also
is there
works.
Go ahead.
Is there what?
You could also do that with dreams too. before you incubate a dream, you could just before going to sleep, you can say what you want to dream. Maybe you want to make contact with a past, with a loved one who is deceased, and make that intention right before you go to sleep, and watch what happens.
Okay.
You could also, I mean, one of the most common stories we hear is about pets that have passed on, and how people really, yeah, I mean, there's a grieving process when you lose a dog or a cat or a bird. And in many cases, the animal never leaves the house. It stays with the person, you know.
Right.
But you, again, you have to be aware that it's possible.
Yeah,
Jay, don't you do drumming, Jay?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I was wondering.
That's perfect.
I was going to say, yeah, Trish and Rob, you know, is there a way of incorporating that, you know, into the process of, you know, tuning in or making contact?
Yes, so normally when people meditate, they think if you have music at all, it's just a very light meditation music, soothing music. But actually, there's another method of getting into a deeper state, into a trance state, and that's through drumming, and very rapid drumming.
Shamanic drumming.
Drumming with a very rapid beat, like 5 to 7 beats a second. And it very repetitious and monotonous. There's no... you know,
but effective.
Yeah.
That's the point, the repetition over and over again. And there's lots of CDs available with shamanic drumming, and also just introduction to shamanism and spirit contact through shamanism. And but that's one way. And my meditation workshop that I give, the last class, I always go to shamanic meditations and using the drumming. So it's a shift of gears from what we had done earlier, but it's also very effective. It's usually the most best liked class, and people have the most interesting comments and
experiences.
Yeah. So anyway, Jay, I just thought, that exercise of yours, your drumming, that might be, because you're also, it's an active kind of process, that you're using in addition to, intention, awareness, all of those other basics of contact as well.
I think it would be interesting to be a drummer because you could create your own. That way, you're bringing on the trance and the altered state.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So, any other question there, Jay?
One thing I'm going to ask is that your heart has to be open to communicate with the other side, or be open to spirit?
Well, I think the more receptive you are, the better. The better your chances. I mean, if you're a person who's a skeptic and you're just dead set against any kind of spirit contact, it probably is never going to happen. But sometimes, we have one story in the book that happened to Bernard Beitman, who's a psychiatrist at the University of Virginia, who's one of the few, I think he may be the only psychiatrist now who's doing a real study of synchronicity and spirit contact, because that's how he started. One night in 1973, at 11 at night, he started choking, and he hadn't been eating anything. There was no food in his throat. He hadn't had any water that went down the wrong way, nothing like that. And after about 15 minutes, he could finally catch his breath again. And the next day, his brother called him and said that their father had died the East Coast. He was in the West Coast at 11 p.m. Pacific time, had died at 2 in the morning Eastern time at the time he was choking, and he had choked to death.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is a case where, I mean, I don't think that Bernard was a complete skeptic, but, he was just leaning, he was just in the kitchen when it happened.
We have another story also with another doctor, Bernard. Bernard is his last name, Christian Bernard. You may be familiar with that name. He was the first, he was a South African surgeon who became world-renowned when he performed the first heart transplant. And he wasn't a particular someone who was necessarily interested in spirit contact, but he had a very dramatic experience while he was in a hospital working a night shift, and he was resting in a private hospital room. And his bed was near the window, and there was some light coming in from the outside. And it was around 10 p.m. Where a woman entered the room, and she walked towards him in bed, put her hand on his chest, and began pushing against it. And he looked up and saw that she was a very thin and pale with blue eyes and gray hair, and she was pressing really strongly against his chest. So he took a hold of her wrist in his hand, and he noticed the wrist was very fragile, and he pushed her back and realized she was extremely light. And then, as if she was reacting to his pressure, she just levitated up and disappeared right through the window.
God.
And then Dr. Bernard rang for a nurse, but several minutes passed before one appeared, and the nurse apologized, saying that she couldn't...
Sorry, that's our dog. We got a toy.
They tend to get excited when they're on air.
They do.
Yeah.
The nurse apologized, couldn't... away because a woman was dying in the ward, in her ward at the same time he had buzzed. And so Dr. Bernard asked her to describe the woman, and she said she was thin with blue eyes and gray hair, and she was wearing a white nightgown, and it was the same woman that he had seen.
Wow.
So that was a pretty dramatic experience. It was unusual in that he made physical contact.
Mm-hmm.
That is very rare.
Wow, so there's a lot to think about there, Jay.
No, there's quite a lot to think about there. Wow.
Aren't you glad you asked?
Absolutely. But thanks for calling, Jay. I'm going to go ahead and, there's a couple more topics I want to cover before we're done, but
thank
I appreciate you calling, and we'll
chat again. Good talking to you, Jay.
Good talking to you. Bye-bye.
Now, Robin, there's kind of a... piggybacking a little bit on what Jay was asking about, you know, that open heart, and you indicated being receptive. For some people may want to make contact with the spirit world, but they may be a little scared or hesitant. Now, for me, I'm open to that kind of contact, but I don't want anybody kind of appearing to me and scaring me and having me join
right.
them yeah, on the other side. You know.
Yeah.
So
you don't
so
do
is
Halloween.
There, no. I can kind of like spirit contact light. would be
right.
the way that I would want. So when someone is kind of like me, that they want to do that, but they don't want to be scared to death. Is it, does it make sense to kind of direct spirit in a way to say, I'm cool with auditory or signs or symbols, that kind of thing, but, just don't go appearing to me at the bottom of my bed.
Right. That's why there's so many symbolic contacts that occur. Like we have one story about a woman who her father was very fascinated by cardinals, and he had all these images of cardinals, pictures and statues in his room, and he had a bird feeder outside his window where he was ill for a couple of years, and he would watch the cardinals. And after he died, she was just inundated by images of cardinals. She it seemed like everywhere she would turn, there would be some picture of a cardinal. The Christmas came along, and she was working at this desk in a corporation. There are a lot of Christmas cards come in. She kept opening them and kept seeing more and more cardinals. And she said, she wondered, is this something special this year? Why there's so many cardinals? And she started asking people, have you seen a lot of Christmas cards with cardinals? And nobody else seemed at all. And then one day she was going home from work and stopped at this record store, and she reached into this basket of old records, 33s, and pulled out this album, and it was a Heart album. And so she had been listening to Heart that was it was actually playing in the store, and she found this Heart album, took it up to the guy, and she said, look, you're playing this music, and I found this old album. And he said, yeah, usually I'm not supposed to play my own music, but the boss isn't here, and so I'm just playing my own stuff. So she goes home and takes a closer look, and the picture, it's a kind of a folk art picture of a woman, and in her torso is a bird cage, and inside that cage is a cardinal. It just blew her mind.
And this was right after her mother died. So she felt that her parents were finally together again when she saw that.
Right now I'm looking at the cover of Secret of Spirit Communication, and what does it have? Two cardinals.
Yep.
No coincidence. I have a couple more topics I kind of want to cover. First of all, in your book you address trickster spirits. Can you tell us a little bit about what a trickster spirit is?
Yeah, one of our favorite stories was told to us by a woman who's a poet, Charlie. And she and her family had known for years that the house was haunted. But she had gotten used to the spirits, which tended to be more active when the house was filled with kids. So one Thanksgiving, they were all sitting around, you know, getting ready to have Thanksgiving dinner, I think it was. And everybody jokingly raised their wine glasses and said, well, if there are any spirits around here, let them break the glasses. And suddenly...
I don't think that's what she said. We want to just let's toast the spirits. And if there's any spirits here...
Let themselves...
You know, if there are any spirits, let it be known that you're here. And the woman who was holding up saying that toast, her wine glass just exploded, sending wine all over the table.
That's a trickster.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. I just, you know, I just want to make sure it wasn't, you know, those negative energies. But the tricks, you know, tricksters, you know, and pranks and that kind of thing. I think those are
good.
Yeah,
they're not necessarily negative.
I'm sorry.
All I said was they're more like they're like mischievous
jokester
kids.
Mm-hmm. Challenging, and they can seem to be negative because they challenge the way we look at things.
Yeah, very much. So, and the last topic I want to cover. Now, first of all, I will say that in your book you have a lot of practices for people to utilize, which I think is great. You know, because it's to me, you know, once you learn basic information, sometimes it's hard for, you know, a reader to try to apply what has been learned.
Right.
And the practices that you have in your book are great for that. So, one of those, well, actually there's three of them, but they all deal with meditation, and there's it's a lower, middle, and upper world meditations, you know, separate meditations for each. I'm curious as to how you would describe that lower, middle, and upper world.
Sure. Let me explain first that shamanism is an ancient practice that dates back at least 10,000 years. It would, although it's not a belief system in the sense of religion, it's about spirit contact, and it's because of it predated Christianity and Judaism. So when we talk about the lower world and the upper world, it's not the same as heaven and hell. by any means. The lower world is a journey that usually is entered by going into the earth in some way, like through into a cave. Like I lead one meditation where we walking through a path through the forest, and you come to a waterfalls, and you see some stone steps leading down to the edge of the waterfall, and then as you get down there, you see an opening, and you go behind the curtain of water into a cavern that descends down, but you see a light at the end, and you follow that down closer and closer to the light, and you enter into another world, actually. It's a more vibrant world, the lower you're entering, the lower world, that there's more life there. It's like a primordial. How do you pronounce that word, Trish?
Primordial?
Primordial.
An essence of Earth that we don't have, and it's alive with beings, and this is where you can make contact with a spirit guide that can be in the shape of a human, or it can be an animal as well. And when you have a spirit guide, a power animal, it's not really an individual animal itself, but the archetype of that animal that you're contacting and that you're communicating with that serves as your spirit guide. So that's the lower world. And the upper world is one where you do the opposite. Rather than going down, you go up, like you climb a tree, or you climb up a rope, or you climb onto the back of a large bird that soars off into the sky, into the cosmos, and eventually you come to like a barrier of fog, and you pass through this fog, and then you enter this higher world where it may be a crystal city, or it may be a city of clouds, and where there's higher beings that are there as teachers, usually in human form, and that people who can make it into the higher world can ask questions and gain knowledge and wisdom, and these beings are there to help and teach.
In each of those, notice you go behind, like behind the waterfall, or get through the other side of the fog. It's like that concept of the veil.
Right, yeah. And the middle world is another version. The middle world is another version of our own world. It's like our world, but it's a world where the elves and the fairies and the gnomes all exist. And there's spirit beings there that are friendly, and there's some there that are not so friendly. So it's a place you can go to shamanic journeys to the middle world, or often if you say you lost something that's very important to you, you can take a shamanic journey to the middle world and find that object, and you come back and there it is, you'll find it. And there's just a lot of different purposes, but you can enter into the middle world by a similar way of going into the lower world, but it's very much it's an alternate version of our own world where these mythical beings exist.
Wow, well, that would be quite a journey, quite a meditation. So, well, Rob and Trish, we're at the end of the show, so I want to thank you for your time, and I did recognize that on Amazon, where your book is, that you got some great reviews from people that indicated that your book was very easy to read and very understandable and approachable. So for listeners out there who are interested in exploring the idea of tuning in and making contact with spirit, it's a great book to do that. And again, the practices that you have at the end of the book are great for readers to be able to apply. So I want to thank you for your time.
And please, if anybody has stories, well, thank you.
Okay.
And if any of your readers have stories, you can contact us through the blog. We're always looking for new stories and new material and doing research.
Just one final comment from me. We in the world of entertainment, the spirit world is usually seen as something ugly and fearful, zombies and ghosts that are attacking us. But that's not the way it really is. That's for entertainment. But you got to get past that barrier and see the light.
It's more like the movie Ghost.
yeah, except for those dark things that come and whisk people away.
Really? Well, thank you so much, Robert. We really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
It's my pleasure, and I'm going to make a special note of your blog because synchronicity happens a lot for me, which I love, and I'll be sure to share it on your blog. But thank you for your time.
Wonderful.
I've really enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
You're welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guests have been Trish and Rob McGregor. We've been talking about their new book, Secrets of Spirit Communication, Techniques for Tuning In and Making Contact. Again, their book is available at Amazon.com. And, again, you can find out more about the synchronicities by visiting their blog, which is blog.synchrosecrets.com. And you can also find out more about Trish by visiting her website, which is trishmcgregor.com, and more about Rob by visiting his website, which is robmcgregor.buzz. And I have direct links to the websites in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BiteRadio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.